Okay, so the date is Wednesday, February 18th, 2026.
Yeah.
And if you haven't checked the tech wires in the last, I don't know, 24 hours, I'd say don't panic, but maybe you should panic just a little.
Just a little bit, yeah. It feels like the entire industry just cleared the table. I've been tracking the commits and the press releases since midnight, and the sheer density of it is just
It's
overwhelming.
completely overwhelming. We've spent years talking about chatbots and, text generation. Remember 2023? When an AI writing a haiku was like the peak, that feels so vintage this morning.
It's ancient history.
This is a shift to something else, something like multisensory perception, real-time execution.
That's the perfect way to put it. We're not just instructing the machine anymore. The machine is actively perceiving. It's calculating physics. It's simulating human nuance. It's a huge leap from write me a poem.
Understand the weight of this thing in my hand
Yeah.
and clone my personality.
Exactly.
We have so much ground to cover. We're looking at six massive updates today. Google is changing music. Anthropic just broke the biological speed limit. OpenAI is, well, changing how AI thinks.
And that's before we even get to NVIDIA's data center in a fridge or Apple's new
Or
sensors.
the identity crisis Microsoft just handed all of us.
Yeah, that one.
So the mission for this deep dive is simple. How do you survive the rest of 2026 when the world's digital architecture just changed overnight? Let's start with the one hitting the creative world, Google Gemini.
Right, so Alphabet just dropped the hammer here. They've rolled out native music generation into Gemini, built on their Music FX architecture.
And before people roll their eyes, because we've heard AI music for years, this is different.
It is so different. We're used to the flat MP3 problem.
Right. I ask for a song, it gives me this muddy file where you can't separate the drums from the bass.
Exactly. Before this, you asked for a song and the AI give you like a baked
A
cake.
baked cake. You can't unbake it.
You can't take the eggs out. If the drums were trash, too bad, you're stuck. Gemini is now outputting multi-track stems.
Okay, so unpack that. Stems mean I get the isolated layers, the individual tracks.
You get the raw ingredients. You ask for a dark cyberpunk track at 140 BPM in F minor. It doesn't just hand you a stereo file, it hands you the whole project.
Wait, really?
Yeah, you get the kick drum on one channel, the synth bass on another, the pads on a third.
So I can actually take that into my DAW-like Logic or FL Studio
You can.
and produce it.
You can mute the drums, you can put a filter on the bass, you can even ask Gemini, hey, re-render only the synth line in a major key, and it'll do it while keeping everything else the same.
So it's not a generator anymore. It's a session musician.
That's it, it's a collaborator.
Wow. Okay, but what does it do to the economics of all that background music we hear online?
It obliterates it. Think about a company like Epidemic Sound or Artlist. Their whole model is selling licenses for stock music to
It's
YouTubers.
a massive industry.
Yeah.
Creators spend hundreds a year just to avoid copyright strikes.
And that model is now basically obsolete. Why would you pay for a library when you can generate the exact track you need, perfectly timed to your video, royalty-free, in about 30 seconds?
You could have it swell right when your logo appears.
To the frame, it renders to the frame. The value of stock audio just went to
But
zero.
who owns it? If I do that, is it my song?
And that's the absolute mess we're in now. IP lawyers are scrambling. If you take a Gemini stem, add your own melody,
Yeah.
do you own the master recording? The framework just doesn't exist yet.
Another technical solution that creates a legal nightmare.
Okay.
So while Google is mastering art, Anthropic is obsessed with just pure speed. Claude 4.7 Mini.
Yeah, this one is fascinating because mini usually means dumber but cheaper, you
Right,
know?
the budget model.
But here, mini is all about latency. They're optimizing for one metric. TTFT, time to first token.
Okay, why are we counting milliseconds here? Is it really that noticeable to a person?
It's the difference between talking to a machine and talking to a person. Right now, as we're talking, your brain takes about 200 to 250 milliseconds to process my voice and start planning a reply.
Right.
That's the biological speed limit.
Okay, so that's the human benchmark.
Claude 4.7 mini
Yeah.
reacts in under 50 milliseconds.
50, as in 5-0.
5-0. It's
Yeah.
faster than your nervous system.
So that robotic pause, the 2 seconds of silence where you're just staring at a spinning circle.
It's dead. It's gone. You
Bro.
can interrupt it mid-sentence. And because the latency is so low, it just pivots instantly.
Yeah.
It doesn't stutter. It doesn't get confused. It just shifts direction like a really attentive person would.
That's incredible for just, chatting with my phone, but
Yeah.
there has to be a bigger play here for Anthropic.
Oh, yeah. The play is enterprise, specifically call centers.
Of course.
If you're running a massive support center on Zendesk and you can deploy a voice agent that reacts faster than a human, has zero lag, and is completely indistinguishable from a person,
you fire the humans.
You fire all of them. This is the B2B disruption of the decade. It removes the last barrier to full automation, which was that perceived empathy and timing.
Okay, that is heavy. So Google's got the studio, Anthropic has the phones. What about OpenAI? The rumors are that the GPT brand is dead.
That's the big leak out of San Francisco. The GPT-era generative pre-trained transformer is effectively over. The new code name is Orion.
Why change it? I mean, GPT is like Kleenex. My grandmother knows what ChatGPT is.
Because GPT implies probability. It's about predicting the next word. It's a super fancy autocomplete. Orion is a shift to pure reasoning, to system two thinking.
Okay, for anyone who hasn't read their Kahneman, give us the quick system one versus system two.
Right. System one is fast. It's instinctive. It's your gut reaction. That's what chatbots have been.
Shooting from the hip.
Exactly. System two is slow, deliberate, and logical.
So Orion is slower.
Intentionally, yeah.
Yeah.
Unlike the old models, when you ask Orion a question, it pauses. It doesn't answer you right away.
But wait a second. We just spent all this time praising Anthropic for being fast. Now OpenAI wants to be slow.
Right.
That feels like a downgrade.
It really depends on what you want, right? If you want a conversation, you want Anthropic speed. But if you want to solve a complex coding problem or find a legal loophole,
you want it to think, not just react.
You want it to think. And during that pause, it's using a tree of thoughts technique.
Tree of thoughts.
It's simulating thousands of possible answers in the background. It's actually debating itself.
It debates itself.
It creates a thesis and an antithesis. It finds its own bugs, spots its own logical fallacies, and then, only after it's confident it has solved the problem, it gives you the answer.
That's a fundamental change. It's less of a search engine, more of a senior strategist.
Precisely. The whole bottleneck has shifted. It's not about training anymore. It's about inference. How much time can we give the model to think? It's an autonomous problem solver.
But all this thinking has to happen somewhere, physically. Which brings us to NVIDIA. Jensen Huang just unveiled the Rubin R100.
And this is the other side of that coin. For years, it's all been about these massive city-sized data centers in the desert. But Rubin is for the edge.
The edge always sounds so dramatic. What are we actually looking at?
Physically. Imagine a server rack that's about the size of your fridge at home.
Okay, a fridge in the office.
A fridge that is a self-contained supercomputer.
But why would I want that? I mean, we spent the last decade moving everything to the cloud. This feels like going backwards.
Two words, data sovereignty. That's the magic phrase for 2026.
Wow.
If you're a hospital or a bank or the military, do you really want to send your most sensitive data to Google or Microsoft's cloud?
Absolutely not. You worry about hacks, compliance. I mean, patient records can't leave the building.
Exactly. With the Rubin R100, you can run a massive model like Orion completely offline, air-gapped.
No internet connection needed.
None. So you get the intelligence of the world's best AI, but your data never, ever leaves your building. It solves that security fear instantly. It decentralizes everything.
Okay, that's huge. Moving from the heavy industrial to something that feels like science fiction. A joint patent from Apple and Motorola.
Yeah, for Siri Pro.
And the headline is that it understands physics. I don't how. My phone's camera sees pixels. It doesn't feel weight.
I know, it sounds impossible. But it's this breakthrough in sensor fusion. They're combining LiDAR, spectroscopy, and this is the wild part.
Go on.
Muscular vibration analysis.
My was.
Think about holding a gallon of milk versus an empty plastic jug. Your hand, your muscles, they microvibrate differently. The capillaries in your skin even change color slightly.
You're telling me my phone is watching my hand shake at a microscopic level to figure out how heavy something is?
That is exactly what it's doing. It analyzes the tension in your arm, cross-references that with the light data to guess the material, and then calculates the weight, and it's surprisingly accurate.
That is mind-blowing. Yeah. But okay. What's the use case beyond a cool party trick?
Industrial quality control. Imagine a worker on an assembly line picking up a metal part. The camera can instantly tell if that part is hollow when it should be solid, just based on how the worker's muscles react.
It sees defects the human eye can't.
And augmented reality. To make a virtual object look real when you place it on a table, the computer needs to understand the heaviness of the real world around it. It's making the digital world respect Newton's laws.
All right, let's go to the last update. And this is the one that, frankly, kept me up last night. Microsoft. the Copilot Ghostwriter plugin.
Yeah. This is the one that sent a shiver through the markets this morning.
It's built into Office 365. It uses RAD, so it's looking at your documents. But it's not just summarizing them, is it?
Oh, no. It scans everything. Your last 10 years of emails, Teams chats, Word docs, everything you've ever typed at work.
And it learns my style.
It doesn't just learn your style. It becomes a semantic clone of you. It basically vectorizes your personality.
So give me an example. If I ask it to write a difficult email.
If you say, write a furious complaint email to the contractor, it doesn't write some generic corporate template.
It writes it how I would write it.
Exactly how you would write it when you're angry. It uses your specific sarcasm, your jargon.
My passive-aggressive sign-offs.
All of it. It'll even mimic your common typos to make it feel authentic. It knows you use best instead of sincerely. It knows you use ellipses when you're annoyed.
That is deeply unsettling. If it sounds exactly like me, how would anyone know it isn't?
They wouldn't. That's the whole point. And it's also the danger. But the economic impact is what hit first.
The stock market.
Upwork and Fiverr crashed, down over 10%. Because think about it, the freelance copywriting market, it's effectively dead.
Why hire a freelancer?
When for $30 a month, the CEO's AI clone can generate perfect, on-brand content instantly. A human copywriter is, what, $50,000 a year? This is $360,000. And the AI never needs a briefing on the tone of voice. It is the tone of voice.
So let's zoom out. We have AI making music, speaking faster than we can think, reasoning through logic puzzles, running offline in our offices, feeling the weight of objects, and stealing our personalities.
It's an avalanche, and it forces us to rewrite the survival protocol for 2026.
So if the machine can do all of that, what's left for us? If it can create and reason and perceive, where do we fit?
I think creation is no longer the primary human value. We have to let go of that. Writing the notes, writing the code, typing the text, that's all execution. And the machine just does execution better.
So if we aren't creators, what are we?
We're orchestrators.
Orchestrators.
Yeah. Think of it like a symphony. You don't need to be the best violin player anymore. The AI is the violin. The AI is the cello, the percussion. Your job
has to be the conductor.
Your job is to be the conductor, to direct the noise. The only competitive advantage left is high-level strategy, asking the right questions, managing the risks.
So we have to stop trying to be the player and start being the manager.
That's the shift. If you try to compete on output, if you try to write faster or code better, you will lose. You can't beat Silicon on execution. But if you can stand above it all and direct these powerful systems toward a goal, that's where the value is now.
It's a sobering thought.
Yeah.
But also kind of empowering. It's it's a call to level up, to stop doing the grunt work and start doing the real thinking.
The transition is over. You're either the conductor or you're part of the background noise.
And on that cheery note, we'll wrap up this deep dive. It's February 18th, 2026. The world is different today. And the only question is, are you ready to conduct the symphony?
It's the only choice we have left.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next one. Stay curious.